Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Buffalo Bills Maybe Next Year, the podcast that is still assessing whether our subpar 2015 was due to bad scheming, was it inadequate performance. We're still trying to address these issues now and try and really determine back, you know, where we did try to trade Scott, as everyone knows, two Bills and beers. He did fail his physical. That was the hang-up on that. So, and Bills and beers, of course, stringent physical, tough to get through. So, now we're kind of looking at how we've set things up. And
a little awkward in the locker room right now.
It's a little awkward.
Yeah, can't say it's not, guys.
Right, this is for those longtime Bills fans, you might remember the John McCargo trade, where they said, yeah, we're going to trade you to the Colts, and they trade him to the Colts, and he failed a physical with the Colts, and again, sent back to the Bills, and they were interviewing the Bills locker room, and he's like, I don't know. I don't even know where to start with this. So it was the most awkward interview ever. So
The play clock's at 5 seconds, Paul, just so you know on this intro.
Okay, I'm Paul.
And I'm Scott.
I'm Frank.
All right, so, now I'm going
to interrupt him. Intro. I'm sorry, Paul.
Well, I was just going to note, Frank, you are known for your intros. You started an intro in season two that I think is still going on right now. I don't think we ever even finished it.
I'm in the booth now, so I'm just going to pretend like everything I did was perfect. I'm the Rodney Harrison of this podcast. It's just like, I know everything about intros.
Yeah, it's like that commercial with Brett Favre when he was Monday morning quarterbacking everything. And walking around and be like, yeah, I would have done that this way. All right, well, you guys didn't come to hear us chat idly with each other because we never, of course, have done that on this podcast. Instead, we'll focus on a few things today. We'll talk about some of the changes we've seen to the Bills coaching staff. Well, the one change we've seen since we talked last week, the defense in general, talk about some stuff in the NFL, talk a little bit more about the Bills going forward next season at some positions. It's going to be a jam-packed, loaded podcast, so Pull up a chair, grab some bourbon, grab a cigar, and let's dive right in. And while we talk about the Bills' defense, it's a topic that we definitely touched upon last week, and this will lead into the discussion of one of their new coaches who will be coaching the secondary. And we debated, okay, you know, if they've been having issues with, you know, is it the way that they have run this team? Because we're seeing Jim Schwartz was just hired today by the Eagles. We saw them drop in the standings in every perceptible way this year. We debated this question really throughout the year, but now it's coming to a head with Rex Ryan and Doug Whaley both saying, yeah, we're going to change our approach on defense in 2016. We're going to have a new direction, but not really specifying what that is. So I will open up the question to the room. Do you? And it's really a two-parter. Do you think, one, that the Bills, what do you think the Bills are going to do? Are they going to change up how they had their scheme this past year to a non-Rex Ryan scheme, or are they going to change up their personnel to fit the scheme? So what do you think they will do? And then two, what do you think they should do? And I think I will start this week with, well, Frank is first alphabetically, so I'll go with Frank.
Very good. And I also gave you a grief on the intro, so I should have to give it the stab first. I think they're going to move to the typical Rex Ryan defense, which if I remember correctly is a 3-4. Is that right? Have got my threes and my fours?
You're right. You're dead on.
A lot of the chatter this week was that, you know, he didn't want to rock the boat too much and felt like with the talent that you could probably end up with some sort of hybrid situation, employing last year's defense a little, but also introducing his defense this year. I don't know how much of that is a cover and how much of that is is true. I do know that they managed to play with four defensive linemen a lot, so I think that there was some truth to that. And I think that's what they're going to do. They're going to find some linebacker. I think the other thing they're going to do is they're going to have to find some linebackers and some other people that do play the Rex Ryan defense. So I think they're going to switch that way, and I think that the hiring of Rob Ryan is part of that. And I think the new assistant defensive backs coach, Ed Reed, is also part of that because he's a player from a Rex Ryan system and also, like, you know, a Pro Bowl, maybe Hall of Fame type safety. And so, you know, it's not like he might not have anything else to contribute, but I think certainly what they're doing is going to try and get everyone caught up to speed on how Rex Ryan plays defense ASAP. And what should they do? We hired Rex Ryan. I mean, I can't see running any other type of defense as being the smart idea. They gave the only other reasonable under the guise of hiring Rex Ryan, there's only one thing to do is run his defense or do what they tried this year, like partially his defense, partially something else. There's no reason to hire Rex Ryan and then keep Jim Schwartz's defense with Jim Schwartz, because that's not why you're hiring Rex Ryan for. So it seems like Rex Ryan has a good history with defense, so I'm willing to let him kind of run his defense, and we'll see if he can make it work here in Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, I this is the thing where if we're all playing Madden here, and we all are the Bills, what you call it? Can you guys hear me, by the way?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, sorry. I don't know why.
Paul jumped out for a second.
That's why I was confused.
Yeah.
I was going to say that if we were playing Madden, you know, in franchise mode, you can hire and fire coaches like every season, and it has no real impact other than literally what those coaches bring to the table. So you can transition from a 3-4 defense to a 4-3 defense, and there's no real there's no learning curve. There's no human factors involved. All of your robot players instantly become familiar with the new teams, the new schemes, the new terms, the new packages, all that stuff.
Right.
The checks, the audibles, the complexity of a modern defense, especially as one as complex as like a Rex Ryan would bring. So if that was the case, then it would be easy to just kind of say this year, you know, maybe we should go back to a Jim Schwartz defense, because boy, it sure was better 2 years ago and with almost exact same similar personnel. And in fact, you could almost argue somewhat better personnel when you add Darby to the mix, even with kind of the injuries that we got by the end of the season last season in 2015. So in that sense, you know, there's some argument to be made for maybe trying to do something different. But I think I agree with Frank that you really, at this point, you've committed to Rex Ryan. You cannot, in real life, you cannot have people just unlearn or relearn stuff on a year-to-year basis, especially something as complex as Ryan's defense. And so, yeah, I'm okay with giving it another year to work itself out. I understand what Ryan, again, if he was, you know, maybe he was covering for himself, or maybe he was honestly trying to, you know, pick up something good. I hope he was trying to learn from what Jim Schwartz did in that defense and apply it in some way to something he's already learned. And maybe it didn't work out. But at the same time, you know, I think you do kind of give him a pass this season. And I feel like I'm okay with them kind of doubling down on this approach, because frankly, you know, last year obviously didn't work. So, and we're not, you know, short of getting Rex Ryan, which we're not going to, we're getting rid of Rex Ryan, I should say, which right. we're not going to do. It's, you know, at this point, you just got to let him run the defense. So
do you have any thoughts about the hiring of Ed Reed?
I read a very interesting article, and it was one of the good things about the giant Death Star that is ESPN is that they get to do things like cross promote platforms. So you can read the Buffalo Bills blog, and then you can also have them feed in a story from the Ravens blog about how the Ravens guy, he's perfectly happy that they didn't sign Ed Reed as a Baltimore defensive backs coach, because from his perspective, Ed Reed is kind of like the reason that Michael Jordan or Larry Bird or half a dozen other people were not good coaches, because there's no way to teach what those guys could do on the field or on the court. You know, Michael Jordan can't explain to someone, look, you just got to take dribble this way, dribble that way, step back and hit the jumper and walk away, you know, showing up your opponents.
Yeah,
it's not everyone else can't do that. Ed Reed, for whatever reason, whatever his intuition, his game study, I mean, hopefully it was a lot of game study and that's what he can pick up to people. But from my understanding, that's not what it sounded like. From what the Baltimore blogger was saying, was like, no, he was just making stuff up when he was out there. And they would literally, like John Harbaugh or something, saying like, I don't know what Ed's doing until after the play, something like that. So in that sense, that's kind of the exact opposite thing that you want from a coach, someone who is brilliant kind of in an intuitive sense and a physical specimen. And I think, and from my perspective, he is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I think that's a great player, but I don't know that he's going to be a great coach. I mean, I'll give him a chance. Obviously, if anyone deserves a chance, it's him. But at the same time, you know, they made the point that there's a lot of guys, you know, offensive line coach, you know, Kurt Anderson, you know, no one remembers his Hall of Fame career with, the Hartford Colonials or whoever we had last week. It was the tight end coach, right? The other Tony Sperano.
Yes.
From the Hartford Colonials. Again, not, I don't know, you know, it wasn't Shannon Sharp, who is, you know, a great tight ends coach right now.
Right.
This guy.
Expand this analogy to baseball, which I think is interesting. You alluded to earlier when you're talking about even basketball and so forth. Look at one of the worst hitting coaches in baseball history, a gentleman named Ted Williams, by his own right, a pretty good hitter, but he could not teach it because it was so innate to him. You know, he just had that ability. Whereas when you look at one of the best baseball managers out there, Tony La Russa, one of the most average baseball players you would run into on the street, as far as a guy who made it to the bigs anyway, yet right. when it came to coaching, he knew exactly what to do to maximize people's potential.
I think there's a lot to that, and I think I'd be a little worried about it if they hired Ed Reed as the actual defensive backs coach and not the assistant defensive backs coach.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good place where he probably can't do a ton of harm if he's not good at it. But he can do quite a bit of help if he turns out to be able to impart some of that knowledge. And I think that even if he can't teach, you know, how to be Ed Reed, he probably certainly can teach them, okay, this is what Coach Ryan is looking for. And so from that perspective, I think it's a decent hire. I certainly don't, I'm probably in Scott's boat. Like, there's plenty of reason to be like up in the air about it, and let's all hope it works out.
Yeah, and we can find examples that go both ways too. We've erred on the side of giving the fact that it's usually a great player doesn't make a great coach, but then you have players like Ron Rivera, really damn good linebacker from NERA. He seems to have done wonders with the Panthers. Jim Harbaugh was not a great player. But he was a good enough player, a Pro Bowl player, and he was able to, really do a good job leading the 49ers. So, point is, we'll see. And as Frank knows, which I think is a key distinction, he's not, taking over all the defensive backs. He's going to help out in that regard. It's almost like when they gave Andre Reed an internship on this matter. So, you don't really know how it's going to work out, but you really have nothing to lose by it. I don't think he was replacing someone who's going to be considered the greatest assistant defensive backs coach in NFL history. And if so, then we owe that person a huge apology. So
Donnie Anderson, sorry, man. Yeah, little did we know. And the quote was from Brian Billick. It said, "Any coach or player that thinks he knows what Ed Reed is thinking or what he's going to do is mistaken or lying." Brian Billick, who coached Reed from 2002 to 2007. He could do things that would make you scratch your head and think, what were you doing there? But it was a whole lot more good than bad. He's just a different guy that way. So, again, not exactly what you want to hear about your... someone who's going to be in a leadership position, I guess I would say. But at the same time,
Brian Billick, who hasn't been hired since 2007 as a coach, I think.
Well, so, he won a Super Bowl.
So did John Gruden. I'm not really a big believer in him either.
All right. Okay. All right.
Anyway, that's a different discussion. I'm sorry.
Yes.
That'll be a good. I think we call that a May discussion when there's really just nothing going on football wise.
Yeah.
But we're obligated to do at least one of these a month come that season. It's like, all right, well, what are we going to talk about? Hey, let's compare the merits of head coaches who won Super Bowl and whether that actually means anything.
Right.
So let's have the announcers fight in a death match. Who would win? I think you got to take John Gruden in that scenario.
Oh, I thought you meant us.
No.
I think we all know Scott would win, even though he failed his Bills and Beers physical.
Yeah, he would probably kick my ass physical, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Should we? I think we've relatively covered this topic. Do we want to talk now generally about one of the biggest stories in the NFL, before we get back to the Bills, and talk about the first time in nearly 20 years that we have had a franchise relocate and potentially now two franchises relocating? We've had some activity on Twitter on this, some Rams fans saying they found our podcast. We are grateful. It was Andrew Sanford. And, of course, for those of you who don't know that I mysteriously vanished, I don't know if that was covered, my computer randomly shut down during the middle of this. So I'm on my phone now, and I will be hanging up and listening to Scott and Frank talking about this while my computer restarts. But with that in mind, we do have some former Rams fans who, have pointed out our podcast, and we're grateful. I kind of want to explore this from a few different angles. One, we're Bills fans who, let's face it, on this very podcast 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we were talking about this potential inevitability. It's potential fear. And I remember right. Frank saying straight out, I really dread the fact that one day I feel this will be the Los Angeles Bills. And thank God that did not come to fruition. So I kind of want to take this from the angle of what would we feel if it were our team? And also look at the unique situation of the Rams, who, as I mentioned on the last podcast, have a big fan base in Los Angeles because that's where they're from. And then also look at the other side of it and look at the people of St. Louis who became fans by being residents of St. Louis, who now have been screwed out of two teams that are currently playing in the National Football League. So just for general thoughts, you know, I started with Frank on the first one. So, Scott, what are you thinking on the Rams relocation, the potential Chargers relocation?
Well, were we going to pitch our pitch for Bills?
Yeah, let's roll that into this topic. Yeah, good idea.
Okay. Well, I'll start with my general thoughts, and then maybe we can come back to the pitches or something. But I'll start with my general thoughts. I mean, obviously, you know, you have to kind of feel for St. Louis fans. I mean, I think, you know, Simmons always had a thing where it's like if you win a championship in a city, you should kind of get to stay there forever. Like, they can never move you. And obviously, the St. Louis won that Super Bowl in the early 2000s, the 2000 Super Bowl, somewhere in there. The first Pat, well, then the Pats, they beat the Titans, and then and then they lost to the Patriots.
I'll look at
it. Yeah, no, that's what it was, because it was the one after 9/11, and everyone was a Pats fan.
We really hated the Patriots because we didn't know, like, the layers of evil at that point.
Exactly. Little did we know what we were in for. you know, so obviously, you know, I feel bad for the people in St. Louis. I mean, I hope, you know, you can only hope to a certain extent that this is the end of the NFL's kind of constant and just cynical attempts to leverage Los Angeles in an attempt to get teams to build public money stadiums, to constantly upgrade their facilities, and this kind of arms race of, you know, more money being poured in to support, you know, something that, honestly, if you look at the metrics, you know, live concerts are making a lot more money now than the stuff that's going out over the air, records being sold. And I feel like in a couple years, and if the TV numbers aren't quite there because they can't package this stuff on ESPN, or there's too many, you know, network-like things that get put out there and the TV numbers aren't going to be there, then they're going to have to make money off of people going to the games. So it doesn't matter to a certain extent. I mean, the stadiums are a part of that, but the teams, you're going to want to go see the teams anyway. That's where you're going to get your money, some of it, anyway. But the point is that I hope this kind of puts an end to the NFL constantly being able to leverage teams to move against each other. Obviously, this opens up St. Louis as a potential spot for other teams to be kind of moved to. I don't think that's nearly as attractive an option. I feel like that that threat is less credible if you're taking it from a kind of deterrent perspective. In the sense that Los Angeles is an absolutely credible option for someone moving their team.
You're kind of breaking up there.
It's all right. We'll let Scott undo his Zuul situation, which, by the way, it's kind of appropriate. It's a good thing I logged back on my computer, which, by the way, install your plugins and all your updates. Make sure that everything is patched and protected, because otherwise you'll be in the middle of a podcast and down it will go. And if I had not logged back in, we would now be listening to Buffalo Bills maybe next year starring Frank talking to himself, which it was a common scenario before you were married and had a child, of course.
Exactly. But I used to just do this podcast in my room by myself looking at my mirror.
Right. And now we're semi-professionals in that we have an audience, people listen to us, but semi in that we don't get paid.
Right.
So, you know, Frank, what Scott can cut off, what are your thoughts generally? Well, on all of this, it's a big topic. It's a big issue.
I'm a little less sympathetic to the people of St. Louis in only that I really dislike the Cardinals, but I understand that that's a lot of sports jealousy, so they can just lord that over me and not take my dislike too seriously.
And for the record, he's talking about the St. Louis baseball Cardinals, not the St. Louis football Cardinals, now the Arizona Cardinals, because we are...
Yeah, previously the Phoenix Cardinals. Yeah, exactly.
Is Washington Nationals fans, it's tough not to have that slight feeling of...
Kick in the nuts. But St. Louis is a good town for sports. They certainly seem to, you know, they love the Cardinals. They're big Blues fans. It's actually a fun town to go to. So, you know, I'm not going to rag on the town too much at all. I kind of enjoyed myself when I was there. But it's weird because I think it's a little different than in the situation where the Bills would have moved, because that was really about ownership that was unsettled. And when Mr. Wilson was going to pass, which he did, you know, that wasn't the same thing as Mr. Wilson deciding we're not going to keep the team here. It was sort of different versus the St. Louis ownership really sort of put the knife in the back of the city of St. Louis, which I think I mentioned in our brief touch on it last week. No, the city, county, and state of Missouri still owe something like $144 million on that stadium that's now just going to sit there, that the NFL used, you know, as Scott was saying, there's all sorts of leverage situations where you get the taxpayer to build the stadium, and then there's no real guarantee that the team stays there at all.
Right, and we can blame another baseball team we dislike, no offense to Scott, his favorite team, the Atlanta Braves, who I believe were the team that started this whole publicly funded stadium nonsense back in the day. And now where I really want to see this switch back to where the Pegulas build the new stadium here in Buffalo when that happens, and then keep every single penny of revenue from it as a result.
Right, or some sort of like better equity situation, because I do think that, you know, you do benefit as a city and a state from having teams in your area. So I don't dislike the idea of taxpayers being a little bit invested in their team financially when it comes to building a stadium that, you know, they do get to keep in, you know, in their town. But it's certainly got to be a lot more equitable than it is now, where it's literally just you're held for ransom, and if you don't build the stadium, or you don't update your stadium, we're going to move you to a place like Los Angeles or now St. Louis. You know, I think certainly that St. Louis also didn't benefit from the fact that they were the easiest team to move as far as things like realignment of divisions go, because moving, I mean, San Diego you could also move and they wouldn't have had to do much, but St. Louis pretty much was going to go. So if they move, and what was I trying to say? Like,
damned if I know.
Yeah, anyway,
Scott,
whatever.
Were you listening to that, or are you zoning?
Yeah, no, he totally lost me. I was going to make a different point, which in the sense of the
oh, no, I know what it was. It was because you couldn't move Oakland and San Diego to the new stadium, because then you'd have two AFC teams in the same market, which is not allowed, because you have to have one on AFC television and one on NFC television. The television rights wouldn't have allowed that. So you knew that since it was in all likelihood two teams were going to go to LA, St. Louis was going to be the one that went, because, first of all, it actually helps them become more of a traditional West Coast team than playing in the NFC West. And second of all, the TV rights were going to allow for two teams to move as opposed to just one team moving. So, you know, they sort of were, you know, the short end of the stick there, that Jacksonville wasn't one of the other teams being considered.
And that's the sad thing, of course, is that even I think the St. Louis people, I think they did put together a bid for the stadium, and then you had to, Goodell has to go through this charade of like, oh, well, we've decided that all the Rams, the Chargers, and the Raiders all have stadium situations that are untenable for the NFL, and the solutions that they provided are not susceptible, acceptable. So yes, as a result, you know, these things are, you know, they're open for being moved as a franchise, and it's like just this kind of horrific kind of like it. They could have made the stadium out of like gold-plated marble in St. Louis, and I guarantee you that Goodell still would have said like the stadium's not up to standards. We have to move the team to LA.
Right, whereas they could have built the stadium in LA out of the tears of infants, and that would have been fine because they really wanted to move to Los Angeles.
The way they are building it out of the tears of infants, the infants in St. Louis and probably San Diego.
Yes, there's an American television station called Home Box Office, otherwise known as HBO, which many might be familiar with, and John Oliver has a show on there, which I can't remember the name of. It's something like Last Week Tonight. Yes, thank you. And he goes into a great just presentation on this stadium situation, just the power that's in the hands of both, in this instance, the league and Goodell essentially being able to dictate where the team goes, and also these owners to go and make the biggest profit they can elsewhere, and essentially concludes that, you know, more often than not, these cities are better off in terms of quality of life losing these franchises, although, as they did talk to individuals, then you realize, well, Cincinnati, no, there's nothing going on there. You really need the Bengals. So you did determine that facet was out there. But it is, it is really interesting because there's so many teams that have swapped. Remember, we had the Houston Oilers, and like, oh man, they got screwed by Tennessee, and are now the Tennessee Titans, but they now have the Houston Texans. Same thing with Baltimore, losing the Colts, gaining the Ravens, which on a hysterical, not hysterical, an interesting side point, kind of funny that the second the Colts moved out of the AFC East, there is the Patriots rivalry escalated intently, which we can talk about a little bit when we get into the postseason recap, since the former longtime Colts quarterback will be facing the refuses to die New England quarterback. But, you know, I'm interested in the long-term, you know, ramifications for what this does. Will these teams stay in L.A.? When we were kids, the three of us, the L.A. had two teams, and it was not thought of. And then 95 lost them both that same year. The market's there. You know, as Scott pointed out, people have got to go to games, and there are certainly plenty of people to go to games in Los Angeles where you could have essentially 0.1% of the population interested in football, and you're going to sell out every time. So, you know, all those factors bode in their favor. Now, you know, one thing we've kind of touched upon is, you know, and I mentioned this too in the intro, you know, how thankful we are that this isn't the Bills. And I'll kind of go in and start and just note that, you know, the Bills were extremely fortunate that Ralph Wilson left such a tight lease, that the Pegula's local ownership took over the team, that they were able to build over what the franchise was worth at $1.3, $1.4 billion, whatever number you believe, and kept the team here. And, you know, so that causes an amount of empathy with me in particular, being now having moved back to Buffalo. You know, Scott, now this is, I think the question is most interesting for you, Scott, because Frank is from the Western New York area. I'm from Buffalo, New York originally. How would you feel about this team if it had moved? Because your ties with this team aren't geographic. You made the choice to root for this team. You weren't screwed by birthright like Frank and I were.
Yeah, I mean, I think we might have talked about this when we were going through the whole moving thing. But I think, regardless of how I felt at the time, I know how I feel now. To me, obviously, it's different to root for a team that isn't in the same place. I mean, I think, as much as I'm not from Buffalo and I don't have any particular ties there other than you guys, and that would honestly probably deal a lot with it, is what would you guys do? But honestly, I think I would still probably try and root for the team. I'd at least give it a shot. And then the issue becomes, like, would I just get tired of it? Would I eventually kind of – I think I would definitely lose interest in following them as much as I do now, and I think I'd probably – be more interested in other teams, and I, you know, at some point in the future, I could see, like, if my son or something decided to be, like, not a Redskins fan, because there are no Redskins fans in this house, and there shall not be.
Amen.
But you hear that, Henry? You, your choice is made.
The marker has been thrown down. But if he suddenly became, like, a Packers fan or something, then I'd probably end up following a lot more of the Packers than I would, you know, the LA Bills or the Toronto Bills or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's kind of similar for me, and you know, I mean, people who know me, I mean, I'm from Western New York, and I did like the Baltimore Orioles a bit when I was growing up, and I liked the Toronto Blue Jays and the Montreal Expos. I wasn't a huge baseball fan is what it amounted to, but there was teams I liked watching. But it wasn't until I moved here and there was a professional baseball team that I could watch that I really got into baseball. And I also root for the Caps, and that's a product of me having lived in Washington for 15 years. You know, I still like the Sabres. I still root for the Sabres quite a bit, but I'm a Caps fan as well, and I come by that honestly. My wife is.
Frank's wife is questioning how big a Caps fan he really is. With that laugh, I'm a Caps fan. Ah, ha ha ha.
Anyway.
Or she's watching Gossip Girl reruns.
Who knows what she's doing? Other than completely destroying my train of thought there. The point being that I think that if it was a different city, I'm kind of with Scott, like there's something sort of like ultra awful about rooting for Washington in football, that I probably would adopt like whatever my new local team is. I might just sort of say, oh, I live in, you know, if I lived in Atlanta, I'd probably be like, sure, Falcons, whatever. But I probably wouldn't be nearly as invested in the NFL anymore. And I think that if I think that's what I was trying to make my original point with a long time ago, was that the circumstances of the team moving is different. You know, it wasn't like the Bills ownership that was there just suddenly got fed up of being in Buffalo the way that the St. Louis ownership did. there was an extenuating circumstance where you could look at it and say, well, they tried, and unfortunately the NFL sold it to Bon Jovi, which would probably make me like the NFL less, which would probably be a reason why, like, I'd struggle with it. Like, if they went to, you know, I don't know, like, would I still follow them? I think you'd have to for a little while. I think you'd sort of, you know, it would take at least a little while for that to unwind. I'm sure that people in St. Louis won't be rooting for the Rams, but I bet they'll be watching the Rams, even if it's just to root against the Rams. I think there's something to it. I don't know. It's tough to say what I would do, but I think that geography is one thing. And then if you just like the sport, you know, the Rams fans, which maybe this is a good time to lead into our pitch. I mean, the easy answer obviously is Kansas City's nearby. I don't know what the rivalry level with Kansas City is. It might be too much given the Royals and the Cardinals. But you're not far from Indianapolis or Chicago, or I think Tennessee technically, actually, because they play all the way over on the west part of the state. They might be a close geographic team as well. Or you could, you know, solicit and pick a new team, which is, I ranked all 32 teams when I was worried the Bills were going to leave. I did a post on it on an old blog that no longer exists. I think I had the Eagles and the Bears and the Colts at the top because I felt like rooting for those teams was like not rooting for instant championships, but they were still kind of cool teams, but they didn't like, it wasn't like bandwagon-y to pick those teams at the time. And I think the Bills fit that mold, if anybody's interested. I don't know.
Yeah. And before we get into the pitch, just two interesting points I wanted to make on what Frank said and what Scott said as well. And it's interesting because I'm kind of good balance between you both, and we'll talk about the Washington baseball team again. I did grow up a fan of the Montreal Expos just by virtue of having played on a T-ball team when I was a kid that was the Expos. So that started my fandom with that organization. I'd love to go up to Montreal, watch some games up there, made the drive numerous times. And really enjoyed it. And when the team moved to D.C. and became the Nationals, I wasn't sure whether I'd like them or not. It's a feel. You know, how do you feel when you're watching the game? And I was watching a game on Sunday night on ESPN, and there I was rooting for them. And I thought, yep, I guess I'm still a fan. So that decision was kind of made for me, and I'm glad it was, because then the team got much better than they'd been during my life, and I moved to D.C. And another interesting point is that when Frank was talking about the fandom generally and how Rams fans feel, there were people on the Rams website who were saying, I'm very happy the team is coming back to Los Angeles. They stayed fans after their team left their market, and I'd kind of be interested in knowing whether I would remain a fan as well. And then the very last point I make on this topic, when Frank was talking about rooting interests and ranking all 32 teams, I saw a good post from someone on ranking who they hopes win the Super Bowl. Their number one was the Panthers. Their number two was the Cardinals. Their number three was the Broncos. Their number four was sodomized by a car. And their number five was the Patriots. So I think that accurately reflects our rooting interest too. All right, enough babble. Let's get to the pitch. I'm not going to say any more on the pitch. I'm just going to kick it over to you, Scott. And go ahead, share.
Folks, the Buffalo Bills, I don't think you're going to get a combination of a team on the rise and a team that's interested as you, as a fan. There's not a combination like that out there. This is a value buy for you as a fan. Sure, you could go be a New England Patriots fan, and you would immediately start talking with a Boston accent. You would immediately start losing friends at work and at home. You'd immediately start smelling and not being particularly good at anything in your life. But you certainly would have a winning team to root for, but that team wouldn't care about you because they are a national team. All those other national teams, Dallas, Pittsburgh, Green Bay, they got fans left and right. They don't care about you. There's lots of bad teams out there. Jacksonville, Oakland, Cleveland, bad teams. Teams that aren't getting any better. Oakland might be getting better, but they're not really getting that much better. I think Derek Carr is going to get hit by a bus someday, and then they're back on the trash heap.
I like how in this scenario, Buffalo is a team that qualifies as definitely getting better.
Definitely getting better. This is, I assume,
the characteristic between Oakland and Buffalo.
I assume that everyone listening to this podcast who's a Rams fan has not been listening to the podcast over the last 6 months, in which I may have said some different things. This is a brand new pitch. We're just starting.
By last 6 months, we mean last 3 years.
I've been...
Or 4 years, actually.
4 years. since we started watching football at the bar together 10 years ago. That said, this team, I'm a big fan of Rex Ryan. I'm a big fan
of Doug Whaley.
I can't even get it out. Our GM is a really great scout. He has a good eye for talent. I will say that. He has brought in some exciting players. There's a lot of exciting players on this team. You have LeSean McCoy. You have Tyrod Taylor. You have
Mario Williams
for another 3 weeks.
Yep.
You've got
Jerry Hughes.
Marcel Darius, who's probably a pork chop away from going up to showing up to camp to 400 pounds or something now that he's signed his gigantic contract. But regardless,
which buys you a lot of pork chops.
Go back and look at our old podcast. We figured out what Marcel Darius's weight was worth in gold, and that also would buy a lot of pork chops. Apropos of nothing. However, I'm getting off track. The point is that the Bills, they care about you. They care about you, the Rams fan. They know what you've been through. They know how you feel. We've all been through that, as we just were talking about. And frankly, you are going to remember this day as a great day in your life when you said, I'm going to make lemonade out of lemons. I'm going to find a new team, a team that appreciates me, a team that's not going to leave anytime soon, a team that's on the rise, a team that's got a potential franchise quarterback, and a team that's got a great fan base. You want to come, you want to have some fun at a tailgate? Come to Buffalo Bills country. Go check out a Deadspin. We know how to have some fun. Now, if you don't want to get, you know, lit on fire and thrown into a bus, sure, maybe pick another team. But who doesn't like that? No one. That's why those posts get so much hits. I'd say welcome to Buffalo, St. Louis fans, and welcome to Buffalo Bills maybe next year. Which, gall darn it, you know, maybe next year. Maybe that's the year. That's it. Over to you, Frank.
Yeah, I think I echo everything Scott said. I double down on this podcast as being a good reason to be a Bills fan because, let's face it, it's the best podcast in the universe. So why wouldn't you want to be a fan of the Bills just for the privilege of listening to this podcast and feeling, you know, a part of the team? As many of our Facebook listeners and Twitter listeners will let you know, we like to respond. And that's part of that service, that we care about you sort of attitude that Bills fans have. I think there's a couple other considerations, though, you got to add in here. First of all, you're going to go from the NFC to the AFC because it's super awkward. Like, you're not going to want to root for any team that you were, you know, playing on a regular basis. You know, the Bills played the Rams once every 4 years as of late. And as far as I know, there was no memorable, like, you know, crazy game between the Rams and the Bills that was, like, you know, upsetting for both sides. It was, you know, it was just sort of they played and no one really remembered or cared. So you're not crossing any lines in the sand by rooting for the Bills. Also, East Coast team, games are going to come on at noon most days. You're going to be done by 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday. You got your whole Sunday left ahead. That's a key thing. That's a key thing that you're going to be able to do something else after you watch the Bills play, because it's key to survival with being a Bills fan is to have something else to do later. What else can I tell you? Got a cool logo. Red, white, and blue, by the way, America. I think that's something that St. Louis knows something about, America. I dare you to root against America. What else?
Flights from St. Louis to Buffalo as low as $255 on Southwest.
That's nothing. How long is it? Let's check out the drive. St. Louis.
Well, it's a long drive. Don't check out the drive because that's not going to help.
It's a $250 flight. And our ticket prices are among the cheapest in the league, so I guarantee you, you're not going to be able to get to any other place in the continental United States and back for less than $600 with a game ticket in Buffalo. There's also the St. Louis Roman Catholic Church in Buffalo, if any of you get homesick while you're in Buffalo.
And I live right near there. We actually have walked past that church, so I'd be happy to take you to church there if you want. I had a great joke lined up, and I couldn't remember the damn guy's name who thinks take me to church.
Hosier.
Yes, Hosier. Take me to church. So, yeah, it's about a 15-hour drive, 980 miles, so don't do that. But the Southwest flight is cheap. I have done it. Granted, I did it Buffalo to Kansas City to Portland. I didn't even leave the plane, I don't think, so I don't even know the airport. No offense to the city. And I said Kansas City. I mean St. Louis. So
you just destroyed it right there, Paul.
A team that, like, has been good recently, because then that's like easy mode on a video game where, like, Yeah, okay, you won 15-1 in NHL hockey on easy mode. That's stupid. It's not really an accomplishment. You didn't feel like you did anything. If the Bills, you know, win and you come onto that team, it's going to feel like you did something. It's going to feel like it's going to feel important, not the way like if you just sort of root for Pittsburgh or some ridiculous nonsense.
Right. And I think if there's one thing I would add to your pitches is let's look at the law of averages. The Bills have been really bad but extremely mediocre for 16 seasons. That's bound to turn around, right?
I mean,
the law of averages says that. And in all seriousness, I think, you know, there's a lot more similarities between two mid-sized U.S. cities, two teams that have faced the threat of losing teams. And for those of you in the St. Louis area who might not know, you know that great basketball team now, finally, the Los Angeles Clippers, Buffalo Braves. 1977. Yeah. Now the Los Angeles Clippers. So yes, back in the day, this city had an NBA team that was taken away by the city of Los Angeles. So we've been down that road before. You know, we can definitely empathize with how that happens. And I think you'll find, you know, the Bills organization very accepting of all types. We are obviously the intellectual end, the extremely good-looking end, you know, just the super knowledgeable end. And then there's the type who throw each other through tables that are on fire. And you'll find everyone in between. So no matter which end of the spectrum you fall on, you know, I think we're a good fan base.
I got yelled at on Reddit by calling the guys who throw each other through tables idiots. They're like, how do you know they're idiots? And I just didn't respond at all because I felt like there's no way this conversation ends well.
You can't win that conversation.
Right, because you're already, like if that's not just like de facto understood why it might be okay to call a man throwing another man through a flaming table idiotic, you know, I figured why let that go? Why go there?
Yeah, you could be like, this person committed genocide and killed every Floridian in the world, and you'd be like, well, yeah, but why do you say he's a bad guy? Well, you know, you just gotta.
It's just like that, Paul. That's exactly what it's like.
Yes.
It's actually. I don't know. This is a small tangent. There was a movie that we watched the other day, and it had Anna Kendrick, and it had Craig Robinson, and it had John Francis Daley. It had a bunch of very funny people in it. It had Rob Corddry in it. And it was a terrible movie, despite all the big names in it. It was very disappointing, but there was one funny joke in it, at which point, because the devil comes to the earth, and he's basically running the entire...
I believe you're talking about Rapture Palooza, for the record.
That is the one.
That's insane.
And so the devil decides at some point to nuke Chicago, and they're talking to Rob Corddry, who's now working for the devil, I believe. I think it was Rob Corddry.
Spoiler alert.
And no, that's very early. It's very early on. And he's
for 3-year-old movies that weren't even released to the box office.
38% on freaking Rotten Tomatoes.
22%, by the way.
22%. Again, very disappointing. But they're saying, like, how can you say that you're, you know, how can you work for the devil? How can you work for him? He blew up Chicago, and he's like, I am not in favor of him blowing up Chicago. I have been on record of that the whole time. I'm not going to hold that decision against him. He's done a lot of good things. Even if those people in Chicago are a bunch of jerks, that doesn't mean I'm okay with him. And it was fine. Anyway, that was like the one funny joke in the whole thing. And that's much like, you know, just because those guys threw each other through tables doesn't mean they're idiots. And it's like, well, actually, no, that doesn't.
That's more or less what idiot means.
Yes.
My last point is that the NFL really sort of screwed St. Louis, and so why shouldn't they root for a team that pretty much the NFL hates? So
yes,
stick it to the man.
Yes, agreed.
Yep. So St. Louis fans, hopefully you are on board. And now for the worst segue in history, let's talk about the disastrous quarterback situation of the team that you're about to follow. Now, I don't think the starting quarterback situation is disastrous. I think, you know, we are all quite happy with it, save the contract situation, which we'll get into. Let's put it this way. The Buffalo Bills have been cited as a potential destination for Robert Griffin III. That gives you an idea of our depth issue at quarterback right now. So, you know, we're going to kind of give a recap of the positions week to week. I think last year we kind of made the mistake of doing it all in one episode. I'm like, oh, hey, that was an hour and 40-minute episode. So we thought maybe we go episode by episode. Quarterback is the sexy position. So kind of what we'll get into is just a recap of what do you think of the position this past season, both in terms of the starting and the backup performance, and what do you think the Bills should do in the offseason to improve and or maintain that position. I think I started with Scott last time, so I'll head over to have it over to you, Frank.
Yeah. First of all, I think that it might already be settled because we're paying EJ Manuel's salary one way or the other. And
right, he'll be on the roster. I think no doubt if he's not second string, he's third string.
Yeah, the thing is that like unless you can find somebody who's willing to eat part of his salary, which I doubt you're going to find anyone to do that, you're going to have him on the team, especially with that whole thing at the end of the year about EJ playing at the level of like one of the better backups in the league. That's kind of hard to believe when you think about EJ Manuel in a vacuum. It's less hard to believe when you think about backups to people, and you think about how Matt Cassel started football games this year, and so did Kellen Moore. And the if you watch that Texans game in the playoffs, it was like Hoyer and whoever the other guy was.
And Whedon.
Like, how awful was that game to watch? And those are playoff teams, and those were their backup quarterbacks. So I think it's not great that EJ Manuel is your backup quarterback, but I don't think there are good backup quarterbacks in this league. It's so thin at quarterback, it's so top heavy that you just, you know, you can the best you can hope for is that there's a big disparity between your starting quarterback and your backup quarterback, and you're not basically like, you know, circling three or four backups in a row. I don't think they're going to go and get RG3. I think that he is going to cost more than they want to spend, and I think their money is going to go elsewhere. I think they're going to draft a quarterback in like the third round. I'd hope it wouldn't be any sooner than the second round this year. And even then, second round, I kind of feel like there might be like positions of need that are available in the second and third round. It seems like that's a good place to get linebackers and linemen. But
also the local bar.
Yes.
You get a lot of linebackers and linemen there.
Right.
Ladies or gentlemen, we won't.
So I think your quarterback situation is going to be Tyrod Taylor, EJ Manuel, and drafted quarterback. I don't know which one. Just to speak briefly on RG3, because he is a bit of a lightning rod. He had a great first season, and he got injured, and I think that a lot of his follow-up, I don't want to say failure, but his troubles that followed afterwards were a result of those injuries, partially, and another part of it was playing in the ridiculous Washington media market, because it's probably the worst place to be an athlete, and it's the worst position and the worst team for as far as things like attention and ridiculous overhype go, and a part of it because all of his people, I guess, bought into that hype, and they really sort of like the RG3 gravy train was massive and large, and everyone bought into it. And the moment he began to fail, it was sort of built in because they had drafted Kirk Cousins just a few rounds after him, so it was already from the beginning. You know, there were people who wanted Kirk Cousins to start over RG3 like week one, and so they, you know, eventually got their wish, and I don't think Kirk Cousins is much better than a healthy Robert Griffin, but he certainly worked in the Jay Gruden system. So I think that even though I sort of think some of RG3's failure was the product of where he played and his injury, I don't really feel like we need to go grabbing a guy who left a ridiculously like flowery, poetic note about haters and people in his empty locker when he left Washington. Like, if go look on Deadspin, it's like this thing about like, you know, just do for you and haters are haters. I don't know, it's some nonsense that was like completely passive aggressive with the rest of the team, and I don't know that we need that in the Bills locker room, frankly. So
In terms of RG3, I mean, yeah, I think I'm even a little more down on him. I mean, I agree with all of Frank's kind of outside influences problems in the sense that, you know, obviously, you know, I think clearly was getting some bad advice on some things and was not really polished in terms of dealing with the media sometimes and was all too willing to kind of throw other people under the bus when it was as much him. And I am very willing to put it on him specifically for a lot of the problems. I mean, yes, there were obviously injuries and things that hurt his game, but ultimately, like, you know, he's the one who, let's see, 2012 was his good year, if I recall. 65% completion percentage, 3,200 yards, 20 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Outlined pretty similar to Tyrod Taylor at that point.
I was just going to say that, yeah.
It's kind of remarkable. next year, 60% completion percentage, same 3,200 yards, but now 12 interceptions and a much lower rating, and a team that did not make the playoffs as the first one did. And then the year after is when the injuries really started to take a toll, and he only played in 9 games. And then the touchdown interception ratio goes lopsided, goes the other way at 4-6. That is out him out there doing that. Yeah, he's injured, but I mean, at the same time, freaking every quarterback in the league is injured. Tyrod was injured most of the season too, one way or another. So, I definitely don't think we need him. I don't think it's worth the thing. I would not be surprised, that said, if we did bring him in, because if I'm not mistaken, this is also the same head coach who brought in a young Mr. Tim Tebow in after his playing career was thoroughly kind of repudiated. Correct?
Yeah, I think you are.
When said coach was with the Jets. So I would not be surprised if someone was like, oh, yeah, we'll bring him in. He could be a backup, have a special package or something. And then it becomes a bit of a media circus. But again, given that Rex Ryan is our head coach, we have a media circus already. So what's the point and what's the problem in adding another ring? I agree EJ is going to be on the team next year. And, I think in terms of, the backup thing, I would be perfectly happy getting a more kind of seasoned veteran to be the number two. Maybe that's a reflection of me. I don't know if it's a reflection of me being more confident in Tyrod than Frank or someone else who might suggest a rookie. I think a rookie also it makes sense in some level, and it's obviously better insurance in case Tyrod doesn't work out. But there are guys out there, none of them are great. Scott Tolzien, former University of Wisconsin product. T.J. Yates, Matt Hasselbeck, people who have been around and been kind of looked over. A lot of former Bills quarterbacks going to be free agents this offseason. Matt Flynn, Thad Lewis, anybody?
And what about Tavares Jackson? He's got to be close to free agency.
He is, absolutely. Yes, no, I'm taking this list from Mike Rodak's list of free agent quarterbacks, and it's Kirk Cousins, who I'm pretty sure is going to get re-signed. Sam Bradford, who may not get re-signed, Fitz, Osweiler, and then you go into the real backups, Drew Stanton, Matt Schaub, Jimmy Clausen, Matt Cassel, Dan Orlovsky, Sots, Colson, Brandon Whedon, TJ Yates, Matt Hasselbeck, Charlie Whitehurst, Chad Henne, Chase Daniel, Matt Moore, Luke McCown, Matt Flynn, Thad Lewis, Bruce Gronkowski, Mike Vick, Kellen Clemens, Tavares Jackson, Colt McCoy.
So yeah, out of that list, name the person you want more than EJ Manuel.
I would take Scott Tolzien, honestly, because I'm a Wisconsin guy, and if no other reason than that. But honestly, I think given he didn't do terrible when he was with the Packers, and he got thrust into action last year. I mean, obviously they didn't do much with him, but that's kind of a lot to expect to do much. I forget if they made the playoffs or they didn't, or they're just on the outside. But they were 500 with him, and I don't think that's terrible. I mean, Matt Hasselbeck, I would put him out there. I mean, he's 800 years old, but you don't need him for 4 games, you need him for 2. If Tyrod's out for more than 4 games, then season's kind of a bust anyway, to a certain extent. So yeah, that's at least 2 that I'd put out there.
It's a bust.
Yeah, it's really, Frank kind of alluded to this at the beginning of his discussion on it. Is the backup QB position dead? That's that's almost what makes you think, because I don't find myself particularly agreeing nor disagreeing with either of you on your thoughts, because I really think, Tyrod Taylor played very well this year. We've identified the areas that we think, he might want to clean up. Same ones identified by the coaches. Learn to slide in certain situations to protect yourself from injury more when that extra yard is not essential to picking up the first down or other things. Learn to come through in that fourth quarter more. He was the lowest rated quarterback in the NFL in the fourth quarter with his team trailing by 8 points or less. That's kind of a way out there stat, but Cam Newton was number one, so it's not a meaningless stat. And, I really am hopeful the Bills are set the long term for starter. As far as backup, I think you ride it out with EJ this year. I think if you see a QB you like in the mid to later rounds of the draft, you take a look there, unless the one who falls to you at number 19 in the first round was one you had in your top 5 on your board overall, in which case you don't want to pass up that talent if Taylor gets a career-ending injury or just doesn't live up to expectations. But, I think you could go either way with that draft. You could find one of these average backups that Scott, alluded to, and you're still going to ride on Tyrod, because if we've talked about needing to de-emphasize a quarterback position throughout the league and what team can do that, whatever team can do that will succeed, but here we are again. the conference championship games this week, what do we have? Three number one overall picks and Tom Brady are the quarterbacks of these teams. So, you know, we're kind of back in the same spot where no one has broken the mold here. Hey, Jets got close with Sanchez, got to a couple AFC title games there, but they never could cross that threshold into the Super Bowl. So they're the closest example in recent years, for better and for worse. But
well, the Titans' number one pick overall is available for trade, apparently.
Really? Yeah.
They said they were open to trades.
I assume that's a line to get Chip Kelly in San Francisco, like, all like, I'll trade you 7 draft picks for him or something, even though it was clear that he had a chance to try and do that last year and he didn't do it. So
right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so, you know, we'll see what direction the team takes it. On RG3 specifically, I wouldn't mind him, but again, I don't want him leading the team for any more than, say, 2 games a season when there are injuries out there. I'm fine with any depth they can pick up, and at least with RG3, you have a guy who, as Scott noted, had at least 1 good season under his belt and played well. And I don't think, you know, and people mention how, you know, he didn't have accountability, was not a good locker room guy, and all that I believe is accurate. At the same time, he's coming into a situation where he's not the franchise's number one overall pick. He's a guy that was released that the Bills are, you know, picking up to back up their current quarterback, and he can either meld with that situation or not. So kind of a low-risk, medium-reward potential situation. But again, I'm relatively indifferent on that topic generally. Anything more you want to talk with on the quarterback situation?
Nope.
All right, goodbye me. So we now have a segment known as This Day in Bills History. We are slowly running out of AFC playoff games to talk about, which is the bad news. So this will be the last week that we have any good news in This Day in Bills History. Because what's going to happen now are Super Bowl losses, or coaches being fired, or players being told they're never coming back to play for the organization, like happened to Bruce and Andre and Thurman on the same day in the late 90s, or in early 2000s, excuse me. So we're about to enter the dark period. So before we enter that dark period, let's revel in a game that I'm not even going into great detail about because we all know it. Bills, Raiders, 51-3. That is the final of the AFC Championship game. It was a game, and again, for those of you who aren't Bills fans, you're probably even, you know, cognizant of this game if you're old enough, that the Bills came out in the first half, you know, went up, got a touchdown pretty quickly. Raiders had to call timeout on their first drive. Then the Raiders came back, kicked a field goal, and it was 7-3. And, you know, the thought was, oh boy, gonna be back and forth like this all game. Halftime comes 48-3. It was just, 41-3, and then the Bills got 10 in the second half. Never a football game, really, and it was one that made the result the next week when they lost to the Giants especially more shocking that this juggernaut could just be knocked off like that. My memories of this game, I remember Jim Kelly throwing an interception that it was not really his fault. Thurman Thomas juggled in the air and essentially handed to the Raider, and the Bills immediately took the ball back and then marched in for a touchdown. I remember Jim Kelly dropping a snap, running around to try and find the ball, finding it, and then throwing a touchdown to James Lofton. Really, everything that could go the Bills' way that day did, in a way that nothing ever went right in the Super Bowls that followed. So it was probably one of the happiest days of my fandom. You know, the Bills had never been to a Super Bowl before. That game is what allowed them to get to the Super Bowl, and it was really just a thrill moment as a fan. And also, take that, Los Angeles, you know, because that was the Los Angeles Raiders, as you might remember, right. That day.
It was.
So,
zing.
It was a little bit of a shot there. You know, and it was just, I don't know, do you guys remember much about watching this game? Scott, this was a week before you officially became a fan, I believe.
Yeah. I don't remember too much. I do remember Zahir Khan, I think, running back a kick for a touchdown or something. The last king of Afghanistan, was that in this game?
Let's see. I think Zahir Khan, last king of Afghanistan. You know, that might have been the Dolphins divisional game the week earlier.
Oh, okay. That's probably what I was thinking. Okay. No, I don't remember too much about this game then. No.
Yeah, Frank. Now you were a Bills fan at this point. What were your thoughts on this?
My thoughts are Bo don't know snow. That was the T-shirt that. topical a t-shirt sort of pop up. I saw Bo Don't Know Snow shirts, but Thurman do. And then unfortunately the now even crueler Bo Knows Sidelines, because he was injured for that game, which I think certainly affected the result of the game. But man, did watching Four Falls of Buffalo and watching guys like Howie Long talk about that game, because they do talk about it a bit in depth, and it sort of reminded me of just how dominant that game was. Strangely, not like the biggest blowout in NFL history, I'm trying to put it in context, but I've gotten down to like seven games that actually were bigger blowouts, including 73-0 when Chicago beat Washington in like 1940. But there was
in the playoffs, or
no? That was just, I think, a regular season game. But the playoffs games, you got Giants 62, Eagles 10, 52-point loss. So that's pretty seven most lopsided playoff games in NFL history. They don't even rank there, I don't think. Oh, this is Bleacher Reports. This is like, I don't want to click through all these. I hate you, Bleacher Report.
Yes, by the time you click through those, it will be it'll be the next day in Bills history.
Right. But it was truly a unbelievable sort of game that you could. It was video game worthy. It was at the time Tecmo Bowl worthy performance, and there was no doubt they were going to steamroll the Giants for the next 13 or so days. That's exactly what I thought. They were going to absolutely steamroll the Giants, who they had already beat earlier that year.
Yep. Sadly, there ended up being some doubt on there the next game when we were watching, like, oh, not going to be as easy as expected. So we're going to give a good trivia question for Scott, who already threw the King of Afghanistan in here. So this is going to be a bit of a challenge for him. There are some great who dat among the Bills players this game, but we've covered most of them, I think. There's one I want to save for the future. So we're going to focus on a Raiders player. One quote I want to take from this game is tailback Marcus Allen saying, "A game like today is an education. You can talk a hell of a lot about being ready and focused. It's difficult to explain, but there are all these other intangibles. When the level rises, you've got to be ready for it." And they weren't. So Marcus Allen was the starting tailback in this game because the Raiders starter, a player named Bo Jackson, hurt his leg against the Chiefs, leg and hip area, the week before, never played in the National Football League again after that moment. Hard to believe. So backing up Marcus Allen, his secondary backup was a player named Steve Smith, who had come to the league in 87, had never really had an exclusive role, emerged a bit toward the end of his career, picked up some yardage, did well overall. However, their primary backup that day was a guy who, in 1986, rushed for 536 yards, had 142 carries, and then didn't carry the ball again for 4 years, and then would only carry the ball about 81 more times or so in his National Football League career. In the AFC title game, he had one rush for 4 yards. Can you name this Los Angeles Raiders backup running back?
All right. So this is not my forte, obviously, because I'm not a
major. Matt Forte is correct. Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, never
mind. It's not. I'm not a Not a big Raiders fan, obviously. It's an interesting question. Obviously, you think about this period and you think about Bo Jackson, the Raiders, and you go back to the backups and Marcus Allen, all these kind of guys. I'm gonna go with a thinly polished piece of soapstone, the metamorphic rock, because I think that was what they put out there at the tailback position. And again, you know, he got. Well, you said he got one carry for 4 yards, or is that with someone else?
One carry for 4 yards. Yeah.
One carry for 4 yards. You put an inanimate rock on the field, trying to, you know, hoping that he's going to get more than 4 yards in one carry. You know, it's kind of asking a lot. So, yeah, soapstone is the correct answer. Frank,
yeah, you sound like you're thinking on this.
Greg Bell.
Oh, first of all, I want to point this out for Frank. That is a phenomenal guess. Greg Bell did play in this game.
Yeah.
Did have 5 carries for 36 yards, and that is a great guess. Even though he had more carries than the man named the primary backup in the Los Angeles Times article I'm reading, he is, for whatever that's worth, he is referenced not as the primary backup, but this other player's. But I want to say that's just a phenomenal guess by Frank, so good job on that. Silkstone was indeed on the field that day. That's as much as we can say about Silkstone, because it's more than likely that that was, in fact, the case. Disprove that. I dare anyone to. The actual player who was the backup that day, listed as the primary backup, was a gentleman named Napoleon Bonaparte. Oh, I'm sorry, Napoleon McCallum. Napoleon McCallum.
I think I remember Napoleon McCallum.
Which is hilarious to me because at one point the Raiders had not one but 2 running backs on their roster at the same time named Napoleon.
Wait, who was the other Napoleon?
Napoleon Kaufman.
I remember Napoleon.
He once had a 1,294-yard season in 1997 later on, so always an amusing tidbit to me.
And it's funny because they later, at one point, I remember this, in 2002, this is an actual fact. This is not me talking about Soapstone. They drafted someone named Napoleon Harris who played at Northwestern
to play
linebacker, which is, again, I assume that was a that was an Al Davis thing, is that he preferred players with speed and named Napoleon.
And that's a great combination, speedy Napoleons.
Oh, and that I've almost forgot in our QB discussion, we might as well just mark down in terms of our upcoming draft pick. As we talked about in the regular season, coming out this year in the draft, quarterback from North Carolina, Marquise Williams.
Well, he's a lock then.
That combination we've been looking for of Marquises and Williams that are necessary to fill the roster of the Bills. Exactly.
Just pencil it in.
All right, well, we're running over. Shocking. So we'll rush through the NFL playoff recaps and previous picks. I'm pretty sure I botched at least half of mine. But I got close. I was the only one who gave the Packers a shot, so I'll give myself credit for that. I think we have to just talk about, we can gloss over the other games. They had some moments. Packers-Cardinals, guys. What was going on there? Frank, did you watch any of that?
I did not. That was the only game I didn't watch any of.
Oh, man. I only saw literally from the Packers' last drive of fourth quarter on, and that's all I need to see was that last. How many drives does a wide receiver get 101 yards receiving? It takes a rare combination of factors for that to happen.
Especially a wide receiver who had caught probably 90 yards worth of passes the entire season. Like,
I don't even think he had he? What was? I've got to look up.
He had 6 catches or something. That Janus guy. I was obviously fascinated by that game. Obviously, just from the Packers, obviously I have a lot of Packer fans friends. But obviously, Jared Aberderis from University of Wisconsin had a very featured role in the Green Bay office, as they had basically been calling people down from the stands to play wide receiver for them. And I thought it was over for him. I think everyone was like, it was pretty close to over. I saw Arizona blitz on that Hail Mary, and I was like, boy, no one ever blitzes. But I guess if they got a decent secondary with Peterson back there, they would probably feel pretty confident. I mean, how is even anyone going to make it down there by then? But sure enough, just freaking throws it up, and the guy comes down with it. And then literally, I missed the coin toss because I was going from the downstairs TV to the upstairs TV because I was going to bed. And that was stupid. But I agree with the decision to reflip. And then freaking Larry Fitzgerald, I don't know if there's a more underrated wide receiver, in NFL history at this point. Everyone's freaking talking about Calvin Johnson and Julio Jones, but Larry Fitzgerald has been putting out 100 catch seasons every season for the last 15 years, and just he's really, really good. That's what I say about Larry Fitzgerald.
I want to see when the last time he didn't have a 100 catch.
I think he got dinged, or Cardinals have had bad quarterbacks for many of those seasons, and that's the thing that held against him. But in terms of catch for catch, always catches it with his hands.
He had 3 quiet years in a row here, 2012, 13, and 14. But before that, it was, whatever. He had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This is his 7th 1,000, really 1,100-plus yard season out of maybe 14 years playing. So,
yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's a phenomenal player, and that sprint in overtime was something to watch. I, you know, My wife and I were watching a movie that night. I turned the game on, and I just watching Fitzgerald and play, I was gasping. So just a phenomenal game. I hope, you know, if it ends up being Cardinals and Broncos in the Super Bowl, and like either Fitzgerald's going to finally win that ring or Peyton's going to go out on top, and neither is a bad scenario. Of course, they're both the underdogs going into the weekend, I would imagine. Yeah. All right, so the Patriots beat the Chiefs. I don't want to talk about that. Does anyone want to talk about that?
I mean, it's like, other than the Patriots once again being like gifted this incredibly easy schedule to get into the playoffs, they just got to beat the Chiefs at home, which they were like actually had to struggle to do. And freaking Brady throws a freaking interception right to the guy with 1 minute left. It bounces off of him, goes directly to Edelman or whatever, and he catches it for the first down and ends the game. Like literally, he threw it directly at Tom Ali. He catches it. He's running the other way towards the end zone with, you know,
no with the tying score, yeah.
With the tying score, and it's just unbelievable that that's how the freaking Patriots work.
Yeah, that was a moment to watch. Right? I threw my hands in the air. And then looking at the game between the Panthers and Seahawks, a tale of two halves. I came in, the Panthers were already way up. They ended up being up 31-0. And even the second half when Seattle was coming back, and it definitely narrowed the gap, they never got with it. Let's put it this way. After their last score, they still need an onside kick to have hope. I thought the Panthers played well. I thought they let their foot off the gas. But, you know, when you're up 31-0, you can let your foot off the gas and win every game in the NFL history except one, when one team happened to be down 32 and came back and won, Buffalo Bills. So I don't know if you guys watched that game, had any other more in-depth thoughts.
I will say I am confident that if the Patriots or the Panthers play the Patriots in the Super Bowl and go up 31-0 at halftime and they play like they did in the second half on Sunday, they're going to lose. That is not how you beat the Patriots, is by taking your foot off the gas. So I'm terrified that that's how it ends up.
I won't get up 31-0 on the Patriots. So
honestly, the Patriots, that's the thing. The Patriots aren't a great team. They have Tom Brady, and they have the halfway decent defense and Belichick, and that gets them a lot, and Gronk. And those are some decent pieces, but I don't think they're as talented top to bottom as the Cardinals or the Panthers, but I absolutely believe that they will beat the Panthers, and entirely possible they could beat the Cardinals in a one-game kind of situation, and I can't handle it. Can't deal with it.
Yep, understood. And the last game to quickly review, and I'll give my assessment on this one, Broncos and Steelers. A close game, not a particularly entertaining game. You know, it definitely doesn't bode well for the Broncos how much they struggled during the course of that game. Definitely says something about the spirit of the Steelers that's so shorthanded they were able to play as well as they did. But my take on that is, you know, I was glad to see the Broncos win. I hope they get to host the Patriots next week. That at least makes you think they have better odds of moving on than the Steelers would going to New England, but all in all, I was not particularly impressed with this game. Frank?
Yeah, no, it was unfortunately a pretty boring football game, and it was remarkable how the Broncos basically had the game wrapped up, and it still came down to like an onside kick and almost a Hail Mary attempt.
They needed the Steelers to fumble in the fourth quarter and then score on the ensuing possession, and then that was it. That was them winning.
Right. I don't think it bodes well for them beating New England, and neither does the entire history of Manning versus Brady, unfortunately, bode well for the chances of the Broncos beating the Patriots. As flawed of a team as Scott's right, they are kind of a flawed team. I'm not picking against the Patriots this week. I want them to lose, but I don't think they're gonna. I think Carolina or Arizona could, either one of those teams could beat New England, though. I think Cam Newton's the real deal. I'm rooting for the Panthers. I'm not gonna pick a winner in that game because, like I said the week before, I don't know enough about the Cardinals other than this finally watching these highlights now. It's pretty awesome. it's pretty awesome end to the game here. But I'm just going to be entertained by that game, and whoever wins that game, I'll be rooting for the NFC, because that would actually be a new Super Bowl winner. It would be nice. It'd be a new Super Bowl winner if the NFC wins this year.
Although the selfish, jealous parts of us are like, oh, but another team will win before the Bills finally win one. But at the same time, I would not mind either of those teams. I'll jump right ahead with my prediction in the AFC game. I mean, I've got to do it. I'm just going to pick the Patriots to win this one. I just think they're a stronger club overall. I think they'll learn from their mistakes in losing the Broncos. They're healthier. I'll say the Patriots, they cover the spread. I don't know what it is, but I can't imagine they're a heavy favorite, if favorite at all. And I say they win 31-20.
Yeah, that's the thing. You gotta take the Pats, right? I mean, the Broncos are gonna need probably a special team score. They're gonna need, and they're probably gonna have to do a much better job of getting to Brady, than the Chiefs did. I mean, the Chiefs did a pretty good job of getting to him. That's the thing. Like, he was under pressure and he didn't play that. He had a pretty good game against the Chiefs, but he didn't have like a spectacular game. But I think the Broncos, I mean, they only scored freaking 20 points against the Steelers defense, which is terrible all year. And the Steelers are supposed to be a really good offense. I mean, I think the Broncos can slow the Patriots down some, but not enough. So yeah, I'd say, yeah, I mean, Patriots 24, Broncos 17, maybe.
All right. Frank, any thought on that game?
No, I'm just picking the Patriots. I mean, the other thing that I guess Denver has going for them is it's in Denver, but.
Yeah. So Frank essentially forfeited his Carolina-Arizona pick due to lack of knowledge, and I respect that because I'm just going to, I'll proliferate, without knowledge when it's my turn. I love ignorance, and I'd love to show my ignorance. Scott, did you have any thoughts on the...
I'm going to take the solid one game that I watched of the Cardinals and Panthers last week's games, and I'm going to make a pick based on that, and I will say that the Cardinals are able to sneak one out here. I think the Panthers, again, I think they're a good team, but I don't know that they've got that toughness or whatever you want to call it. And I think the Cardinals are a little more battle-tested at this point, a little more seasoned. I feel like they have more weapons. I feel like the Panthers got way up on the Seahawks, and I think I think that's not what you want. I would have been much more confident in them had they been through like a four-quarter battle with them and kept it close, and had to come from behind or do something like that. But them kind of getting out in front and then hanging on late as the Seahawks try and come back, that doesn't make me feel confident in them, whereas the Cardinals obviously had to do a lot of that last week. I feel like that's the team that's going to win. I'll take the Cardinals by, I don't know, three, something close.
Yeah, good.
I just watched the last drive by the Cardinals and by the Packers, and wow, okay. Yeah. I wish I'd watched that game live now.
Yeah, it was like something I've never seen before. Yeah. Just phenomenal stuff. I'm gonna go with the conventional wisdom. I'm gonna be cowardly again and pick the Panthers in this one. I think Scott's right. Like, Arizona's got some fight in them. I think they've shown a lot this year. I think they're gonna show up for one of the biggest games in their franchise history, not counting their Super Bowl year, which would be their biggest game in franchise history. So I think this is going to be a good battle. I think the Panthers just are a little too strong. I think they'll finish this game off. I'll say 24-21. I think it's going to be a great battle to the end. Anything else we've got to recap today? And I think we're like an hour 10, so my bad on that.
That's okay. I did see a graphic quickly that in the AFC, it's been Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, or Peyton Manning 14 of the last 15 years, Joe Flacco being the one exception.
Sounds about right.
So just a little more evidence that it's important to have a quarterback and or, basically the entire AFC has been in more or less the boat that Buffalo's been in, even though Buffalo hasn't made the playoffs, like, who cares, because it's basically been three guys.
Also helps to cheat. Never forget that.
Cheat to win, the Eddie Guerrero strategy. Yes, to reference wrestlers who've been dead for a decade. But, that was his take on things. All right, well, I think we have covered a lot of ground today, as always. So if you would like to check us out, you should Google Buffalo Bills Podcast, and we're on page one. So that's our WordPress page you'll get to, which is bbillsmny. You can find us on iTunes. Frank is nice enough to open and link all of these podcasts. You will find Scott over on the Facebook page, facebook.com/bbillsmny. I will chat with you probably a little bit more this week than last weekend, though I did talk to Orlando, as always. Great to talk to him. I did talk to a new listener, Nicole, for a little while. Not a new listener, but a new tweeter, so I hope she ends up listening to the podcast. So please find us, twitter.com/bbillsmny. If you would like to watch the movie Rapturapalooza, also known as Ecstasy, I recommend you go to Netflix.com or check out your local public libraries. They will certainly be willing to rent that out, and I guarantee you, no one's checked it out. So, with that in mind, you know, we thank you all for listening this week. We'll be back next week, and then we'll probably take a bye week, maybe, because it's before the Super Bowl, and then we'll discuss that offline, and then we will be back post-Super Bowl. And I think that's all we got. So without further ado, I'm Paul.
I'm Scott.
I'm Frank.
Bye, everyone.